This is Jan Swift, and you're listening to Discover Lafayette, a podcast dedicated to the people and rich culture of Lafayette, the gateway to South Louisiana. We record in the offices of Raider Solutions, a technology company that offers a complete fleet of IT solutions for businesses of all sizes. Raider's motto is, "You just want it to work, we understand." If you're wondering if Raider can help your business, please visit RaiderSolutions.com. I'd like to thank Iberia Bank for its support. Founded in 1887, Iberia Bank is the largest bank based in Louisiana, headquartered in Lafayette, with 329 combined locations throughout the South. They offer the resources of a national bank with the personal touch of a community bank. Visit IberiaBank.com for more information. And lastly, I want to express my gratitude for Lafayette General Health. As Acadiana's largest nonprofit, community-owned regional health system, Lafayette General Health is committed to restoring, maintaining, and improving health in the communities it serves. For more information, visit LafayetteGeneral.com. We have two guests in the studio from Iberia Bank Corporation today. First, I'd like to introduce Beth Ardwin, who has been with the bank since 2002. With a background in print media and publishing, she currently serves as Senior Executive Vice President and Director of Communications, Facilities, and Human Resources, as well as Chief of Staff for CEO Daryl Byrd. Beth also serves on the Board of Directors of the Federal Reserve Bank of Atlanta's New Orleans branch. Joining her is Beth Trotter, who joined Iberia Bank 10 years ago as a staff attorney and who is now an executive vice president and CRA officer. CRA stands for the Community Reinvestment Act, a law that directs banks to help meet the credit needs of low and moderate income neighborhoods of the communities in which they operate. Beth is a graduate of Tulane Law School and an active board member of Habitat for Humanity, having served as the Women Bill Chair in 2017 and 2018. So Beth 1 and Beth 2, or B1 and B2, as you tell me, welcome to Discover Lafayette.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah. Thank you for having us, Jane.
I've been looking forward to this for so many reasons. First of all, thank you both on behalf of Iberia Bank for sponsoring our podcast. It's really been much appreciated, and I'm really excited about the opportunity for you to let people get to know you and what you do for the bank and opportunities for women in leadership positions. So Beth Ardwin, if we can start with you, you have really moved up the ranks. I know you started out in media. Is that
yes?
Is that correct? Can you talk about that?
Sure. I started out as a sales executive for the Times of Acadiana way back when, after college, when it was owned by Steve May and Jerry Fisher May. And really, I've been so fortunate to have sort of two stops in my career. Both with the time, one with the Times and the second with Iberia Bank, having a chance to work with leaders, executives who really believe in, you know, women's advancement in the workplace, creative leaders who really believe in thinking out of the box and really approaching life from different angles. So really two great opportunities in my career.
Right. And when I said moving up the ranks, what I'm really referring to is you've earned these positions. And I didn't want to misspeak on that, but you have had some opportunities that I think a lot of people are just, you know, to get to serve on the board of the Federal Reserve Bank and all this. So if you can talk about what your role is at Iberia Bank and what led you to have that opportunity on the Federal Reserve.
Yes, thank you. I joined the bank at a time when it was really in transition. Daryl Byrd and his senior team, our senior team, had just joined the company, and the bank was being converted from a thrift to a more traditional commercial bank. And so as a small company, you know, just serving Louisiana at the time, Daryl really wanted to focus on marketing or communication public relation efforts that were more tailored toward our target audience, which were privately held businesses, commercial businesses that we really could serve best. So I came on board at that time and really focused on public relations. As the company grew and changed, I think as Jerry mentioned back in the spring when you had him here, we've done more than 25 acquisitions over the 17 years or so I've been there. So we really have grown and expanded across the Southeast. And with that came the opportunity to take on more responsibility. Everything from facilities, which is the management of our leased and owned facilities, to our expanded marketing efforts and human resources as well. which is a pretty interesting part of the job with 3,600 associates.
Yeah, so you know, I'm looking back, you joined before Katrina and Rita hit, which was a pivotal year for Louisiana in 2005. And then just within a couple of years after that, that is really when the explosive growth of IBERIABANK began. I know it's continued, but your role had to expand pretty dramatically. I mean, how many states are you in now?
We're in, I'd say...
Nine states for the bank.
Yes.
11 or 12 for mortgage.
Right. Our mortgage office, yeah.
In flux right now. We've had some changes with mortgage, but...
Yes.
Yeah.
So we have. Our first sort of jump out of Louisiana was into Arkansas, mm-hmm. and then both through acquisitions and de novo initiatives, we've jumped across the Southeast. So Florida, right. Texas, the Carolinas, Georgia, Alabama. So mm-hmm. we really, you know, have a wide footprint across that region.
Right. And I know I've spoken with Judy Lejeune, who works with you in your marketing department, and the markets that you're in, while they're mainly, I guess, the South, Southeast, Southern part of the U.S., the markets are different. And so what people are expecting from banking in Louisiana, I'm sure, are quite different than South Florida,
right,
where you've got retirees and a high percentage of wealth.
Yeah, that makes our fun job. I mean, that makes our jobs fun because, you know, while we cross, we're a large regional bank now, we really make sure we continue to customize our experience for our clients mm-hmm. and our brand in those markets. So what we do from a marketing standpoint and a client service standpoint in Key West certainly differs from what we do in Atlanta, mm-hmm. Houston, Dallas, or New York.
Right.
So we make sure that through people like Judy, some of our great teammates, that the experience for our clients is very customized. We have obviously a common brand and common mission statement that mm-hmm. we all live by, but we deliver a very personalized experience through mm-hmm. people like Judy, leaders like Jerry throughout our footprint.
Right. Do you have to travel a lot for your position?
I do travel quite a bit. Mm-hmm. I mean, everything from visiting the markets to conferences or, you know, other special engagements that we've signed up for.
Mm-hmm. It's just hard to believe a bank that's gotten this big is still based right here, you know, right here in Acadiana. So Beth Trotter, if we can jump over to your role at the bank,
sure.
and then I want to let you both talk after that. You are you work under the CRA, the Community Reinvestment Act, and I know you started out as a staff attorney, and you've earned this position also, and it's something that I've heard about a lot, just in the real estate. You know, in the work I've done, but would you explain what you do and what IBERIABANK's role is in that, in helping low to moderate income communities?
Sure. So the Community Reinvestment Officer manages the community outreach programs and the mortgage products and the specialized products that we have throughout the company. So we're in nine states from the bank perspective, bank branches in nine states. So what I do is I manage that program. And so at a high level, community reinvestment is about lending, investment, and service to low and moderate income communities and very small businesses. And so I manage our program and, you know, put forth our team, if you will, throughout the footprint.
Right. And so while you do that, while you're assisting people that might have some issues in getting a conventional loan, you still have to focus on safe and sound lending practices.
Absolutely. And that's, of course, part of the regulation is to help low-income communities and small businesses in a safe and sound, you know, banking manner. So, of course, that's an overarching concern, and that remains, you know, the case, mm-hmm. even though, you know, CRA does make specialized products. We make specialized products in the, you know, DDA, checking accounts, savings accounts, mm-hmm. mortgage programs. We have mortgage grants. So we do a lot of things that are specially targeted, but within safe and sound banking practices always.
So how does it work? Like if somebody is trying to establish good credit, they've got a small business they want to start up, how do people know about this? Is it something you market directly, or do people... How do they find out about these programs?
You know? We do, and we have a myriad of different, you know, different products and targeting different types of folks. So definitely we do small business outreach. We work with nonprofit partners in communities such as a Habitat for Humanity or United mm-hmm. Way or Urban League. We do a lot. In fact, we just had a couple calls this morning with Urban League. We are going to partner with entrepreneurship centers who are focused on women and minority-owned small business in New Orleans. So that's a new partnership that mm-hmm. we're creating. We'll be working with entrepreneurship centers in several markets, Atlanta, New Orleans, and Houston as well. So we reach out to nonprofit partners across the footprint to create strong partner working mm-hmm. relationships. And so that is one way that we do outreach. We also do a lot of marketing. If you look at the home mortgage side, for example, we have five specialized one in-house created specialized portfolio product, but we have five specialized products for CRA. Mm-hmm. So we look for the opportunities to market those, whether it's Facebook, traditional print material, emails. Mm-hmm. We have a marketing group in mortgage that, you know, sort of specifically targets those opportunities. And we also have partners throughout the footprint. We work with housing counseling agencies, mm-hmm. HUD approved partners that we give money to. So we donate money to them to support their programming and their efforts. And we also have grant program where we sponsor down payment assistance. So we give away up to $5,000 if you're a first responder, $5,000, or first time home buyers, $4,000. And that's a grant, that's a gift that we are providing to those homeowners to help with down payment assistance.
Yeah, and closing costs. That really covers quite a bit.
Yeah.
So people have to qualify, obviously. And then, this is something that the federal government has imposed on banks, though, right? Is it encouraged, or are you directed?
CRA is a federal law, so you, mm-hmm. you have to meet the needs, and that's a very broad umbrella. So, but there is a test. We get examined by the Federal Reserve Bank of Atlanta about every 3 years, 3 to 4 years. So there are three components, mm-hmm. lending, investment, and service. But within those components, we are at liberty to do a great deal of different things. So the federal law does not mandate us to do anything very specific.
Like, I mean, give this many grants, give this...
Right. Yeah, the grant program is optional. We created that because we mm-hmm. wanted to do it. There are a lot of banks that do not have grant programs. Similarly, we created a portfolio mortgage product. What that means is we created a specialized product that we offer, and we don't sell it. Most banks, this is a bit of minutia maybe, but many regional banks and most small banks will sell their loans. Mm-hmm. So you originate a loan and then you sell it to a larger third-party servicer. Right. So that's very, very common. But we created a portfolio product that we hold in-house within mm-hmm. our mortgage company. We service that for the life of the loan. And those are specialized products geared only to first-time home buyers. So we're pretty proud of that. We created that product special for our group, for mm-hmm. CRA. And then, like I said, the mortgage grant program that we instituted about 6 years ago, we spent just last year over $1.5 million. So we gave away $1.5 million just to first-time home buyers. We gave away over $3 million for CRA-related causes in general, but specifically $1.5 million in mortgage grants. And we're over, I believe we're close to $1 million this year, mm-hmm. and we'll go over that again.
Well, so here we are, September 3rd.
So. Yeah, so pretty exciting. Yeah, it's a huge investment, and it's mm-hmm. We feel really well worth it. It's we see a lot of impact for it.
The repayment rates are pretty good. Like, people satisfy their mortgages.
Yeah, we still have credit scores, and there's still mm-hmm. a lot of requirements. And again, it's not we're not giving the loan. It's a loan, and it's not a gift. And of course, folks have to qualify. Mm-hmm. We have slightly less stringent standards, slightly lower credit score, a little bit of alternative mm-hmm. credit scoring versus maybe traditional products.
Yeah. I know you've been so involved with Habitat for Humanity,
yes.
and that's a great example of where you can leverage your community resources, the banks, volunteers, and get deserving people in homes that would never have had a chance without those partnerships being in place.
Right, so. And we're partnered with probably 12 to 15 Habitat affiliates across our nine-state footprint. Mm-hmm. I, of course, am very partial to our Lafayette
of
Habitat,
course,
as
Melinda
I've been on the board
Taylor.
For 5 years, and they do amazing work, and mm-hmm. 10 to 12 houses per year. I'm really excited to be on the board. I've been on Women Build Chair, as you mm-hmm. indicated, the past 2 years. What's nice about that relationship, and we have many such relationships with our nonprofit partners throughout the footprint, is we call it the sort of CRA trifecta. So we have a line of credit to them. So we have a loan to Habitat. Mm-hmm. I sit on the board, and we have numerous other volunteers. So we have that service hours mm-hmm. aspect. And then we also donate money to them every year, and we buy loans from them on the back end. As I mentioned, most smaller banks will sell loans. Mm-hmm. Lafayette Habitat is a lender, mortgage lender, so they originate loans, and we buy them. Puts more capital back into that organization to do more lending. So we're pretty proud of that relationship. And as I mentioned, we have several strong affiliate partnerships mm-hmm. throughout the footprint that resemble that setup.
Yeah. What I've always been impressed with too, not just Habitat, but in particular Habitat, that there's such a low default rate. Like, people
yes.
are excited to get their homes, and
yes.
they make their obligations.
Single-digit defaults. It's very impressive.
Right.
And that speaks to the amount of time spent with each of those individuals. So they each mm-hmm. put in over 100 hours of work on their homes as well as other folks' homes. In this case, usually in the Macomb Vise neighborhood, which is where we're focused mm-hmm. in Lafayette right now. But also, they have a lot of financial literacy classes. They also have home maintenance classes and courses. So they fully understand the mm-hmm. financial burden that they're accepting, their challenge they're yeah. taking, and they understand what they need to do to keep that amenable to their mm-hmm. Total financial package in their picture. And they're all working at least one job, many of them two jobs, and and they, as you indicate, you know, they want their home. They're taught how to manage money a little better maybe than they were before, and they're also taught how to maintain their home.
So I think we could all use those classes, though, no matter what income level or background. So Beth Ardoin, you've been sitting there nodding as Beth's been talking about this. You have to keep up not only with what Beth is doing with the CRA, but your job encompasses everything that Iberia Bank is doing. Are there some initiatives? I know when I had Jerry Vascacu here earlier in the year, we talked about the Opportunity Zone. There's so many things going on in banking. I mean, you've got to keep your finger, you've got to stay current on everything.
So, well, the great thing is I work with people like Beth who become experts in their area, and Beth has become a true expert that people across the country turn to about CRA. So she really has done a fantastic job for Iberia Bank, but also for the industry. She really has become a sought-after expert, so fortunate to work with her and many other leaders like her in the bank. Mm-hmm. We're in a privileged position. We recognize that, where we get a chance to focus on equality for people within the company and outside the company. Iberia Bank has such a community-minded spirit about it that we take very seriously. So, you know, through Beth, through CRA, mm-hmm. or through other charitable partnerships, or through other learning opportunities, we're really focused on, again, our internal clients and our external clients, and making sure that their lives are enriched through their experiences with us.
Right. Before we started the podcast, too, we were speaking about women in leadership, and I think it's just industry-wide in banking, in insurance, other financial sectors, probably about 1 in 5 of the top leaders or the leadership team are women. And so I'm sitting here with two with Iberia Bank, but would you touch on that some, Beth Ardoin, about what you've seen? Because I know you're getting like a national view from your position with Iberia.
Sure. Preparing for the podcast, I was trying to think about, you know, the last 20 years or so. And I think the conversation early on was really about you either stayed home and you were stay-at-home mom, or you were a working mom. And I think the conversation today is completely different, right? Where women, 50% of the workforce is women now. Mm-hmm. And so I think the conversation is really there for women to, it's not about whether or not you're going to work. It's how you're going to be successful at working and making sure you're providing a great life for your family. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's a great time for women in the workplace. Certainly the financial industry has lagged a little bit when you look at the top of the house and how many female leaders are sitting in that the top C-suite, but the industry certainly has changed, and there are lots of opportunities. I mean, we look at our company, lots of women in leadership positions, and I think it's just a little bit of a hangover from the past, but there's no better time than now, I think, for women to really find their spot and take opportunities that are there for them.
Right. You know, when I think back about it, many of the male bankers that I know that are top in their fields, they've been in banking their whole life. And so they've, just like you two, they've worked their way up, earning, you know, promotions and leadership roles, but they tend to stay in banking. Mm-hmm. And so you have to have positions open to fill them with younger men, women, people of all backgrounds. And so that's probably part of it. Yeah. In other fields, you might see people hopping around more from company to company. But in banking, they might move from bank to bank, but they stay in that industry. And so is that, I guess that's what you're saying, though.
I think having a great retention rate for our company, but like you said, for the industry, bankers like to be bankers. And so I think that provides potentially fewer opportunities to advance at a faster rate. But I definitely see the industry changing and improving. And and Beth's out in the speaker circuit as well. And she sees, I'm sure, the same. A lot of women who or in great leadership positions making a difference.
Mm-hmm. Right. So you serve on the Federal Reserve Board. And when I learned that, I guess, you know, a few years back, I was so impressed. I mean, they set policy, right? You provide data on the industry. Is that,
well,
what is your role?
Yes. So now I'm retired, but as of, I served until last December. And it's a big honor. So the way that the advisory boards work is that each district has advisory boards in its main cities. Mm-hmm. So I served on the 6th District New Orleans Advisory Board, which is basically 7 people. By law, only 2 can be bankers. So of the 7 people, the commitment is to bring on the ground information, anecdotal information about what's really happening in our local economies back to the district back to the economists, who are then advising the policymakers. So it's a great sort of grassroots effort to bring real information to those that are making decisions.
Mm-hmm. So if I may ask, even though you're not serving anymore, and I apologize for not having that correct in my show notes, where is Louisiana compared to the rest of the Southeast? I mean, I read the paper and hear about our jobs are lagging. Are those the kind of things you're reporting about local?
Yes, those are the things
conditions
that are being reported, as well as, you know, all the different, the 6th district reports up to Atlanta, so it's mm-hmm. It's a big district, including Florida and mm-hmm. parts of Alabama, Mississippi. So there are different economic cycles happening even within that one district.
Right.
So those of us, though, representing certain geographic areas do report on that. And we also talk about what creative solutions may be on the horizon to try to help with jobs in your market.
Mm-hmm. So that'll affect at some point interest rates or...
Yes.
How does it filter out? Like what's
so
the end result?
So it bubbles up, basically. Uh-huh. The information bubbles up, and then obviously the policymakers are using that information to decide on how they're going to vote on interest rates.
Mm-hmm. There's so many things that go into our economic conditions, and I think about just even when the president tweets right. something about tariffs, I'm sure that sends markets, you know,
it's a fascinating
creeping
process.
Off, yeah.
It's a fascinating process.
And then, yeah, the tides turn.
Yeah.
So, all right. So, Beth Ardoin, we've talked about you have approximately 3,600 employees throughout Iberia Bank. I understand there's some mentorship programs. There are some programs in place that can help people, you know, find out more about the business, how they can grow, can you talk about that some?
Absolutely. We're really proud of the progress we're making. Banks, the industry happens to be heavily female, even though not at the top of the company. Our company is about 60% female, but we wanted to put programs in place for males and females, mm-hmm. but some that are specifically designed for females to make sure that we are advancing people throughout the company. So just over the last couple of years, we've made tremendous strides in that area. We hired a diversity and inclusion officer, Monica Sylvain, who's really fabulous. She resides in New Orleans, but she's responsible mm-hmm. for D&I across the company. And with her addition, we started a diversity and inclusion council, which encompasses people from across the company, all different layers in the company. And it's been a really interesting group of people. Mm-hmm. We think we know so much until you actually bring people to the table and hear about their daily lives, their perspectives, mm-hmm. what they think we can do better. So that council, I think, has done and will continue to really help us push people through the company in a much faster pace. We also started a mentorship program about 2 years ago, and everyone throughout the company is eligible to participate, and it really has opened up the dialogue between people, with people across the company. So as I mentioned, we have a wide footprint, and so there are many, many associates who will never actually meet in person. Mm-hmm. This gives people a chance to, you know, build relationships across geographic lines, across areas of responsibility, and helps people ask questions that they need answered to help them advance in their careers.
Right.
Yeah, and then one more thing, we did start Women Unlimited. It's a national program, but we selected about 21 female leaders who are already leaders and budding leaders in our company to participate, and Beth actually is one of the participants. And the feedback so far has been fantastic. Mm-hmm. It's a really life-changing experience for them. So again, we're really proud of what we're doing there.
Yeah, Beth Trotter, you want to talk some about that?
I will. I'm in the fourth cohort, so I'll tell you that I actually don't start the programs, you know, specifically until later this winter. But super exciting. Like, I have had the opportunity to mentor 4 people over the past 2 mm-hmm. years. And the great thing about that program is it's a non-stressful way for the younger, mm-hmm. less seasoned members of our team to speak to someone confidentially who's not their boss, who's not HR,
yeah.
but can ask just any question they like.
It's a safe place
yes.
for them to be open.
And as Beth said, they're all over the company, so I have several mentees here, but I also have one in New Orleans, one in Birmingham. And the one in Birmingham, we've never met, but we talk on the phone once a month. He was from a year and a half ago, but the program is structured to be 6 months, and you have scheduled calls once a month for 6 months. But invariably, you talk to those people forever. So my first mentee, I still talk with, and we get lunch all the time. She's great, and you know, she's someone moving up in the company. Mm-hmm. She is a female who will go far and do great things. And so, and she's, you know, I think she would tell you what she's told me is, you know, really benefit from having the ability to pick up and call Beth, kind of just anytime, anywhere. Mm-hmm. No one's going to get reported back. I just going to ask her, okay, what do I do? My boss is sending me a mixed signal. What do you think about this? You know, and so it's an ability to share.
That's great.
You know, I've been working for over 20 years and she's only been working for, you know, say five. And so it's a great program. And I know other companies do have programs, but this one is, I feel, extremely successful. And because the regular conversation that happens with all of my mentees, even though the program 6 months has come and gone for some of them, and we're all still in communication. And, you know, I can remember when I started working at a law firm in New Orleans in 1994.
Wouldn't you have loved to have that?
Yeah. I mean, that, you know, I had one or two female partners who were people I could talk with, but it wasn't a structured program. And I know that there were probably a couple of associates who didn't have that rapport with anyone senior. And I think it makes a world of difference. And I'm proud of our company for really leading that and pushing it in a really big way. And same with Women Unlimited. I mean, we do have 60% of our workforce, although not in the C-suite, but we have a few.
But they're in leadership.
We have strong women leaders, and this program is a huge financial investment. It's a huge investment in the capital of our associates. And, well, you know, it's going to benefit us all individually, but it's also going to benefit and bring us up as a company. And, you know, so it's super exciting. I've talked to several women who have already gone through. The cohorts 1 through 3 are already ongoing. And they have just said, it's just amazing. I mean, your ability to rethink how you're doing your job every day, how you're leading people, how you're working with your teams, how you're responding to those above you in the C-suite, you know, in my case. So I'm extremely excited.
Yeah.
I mean, it's again, it's a huge investment in capital and associates and time and energy of our company. So I'm excited that they're doing it and can't wait to participate.
What a resource. I just, you know, when you were talking about your young days as an attorney, and same for me, I didn't have anybody I could really go to, and there was no safe place.
Right.
I mean, you didn't show any vulnerability, and sometimes you have to.
Right.
You just don't know what's the best move, but having this has got to be just a joy for your
programs.
Employees.
Yeah. Yes.
And I think all programs we just touched on has empowered our females to have a voice. It gives them a platform, a teammate, you know, and the confidence. It's a confidence builder to say, we believe in you, we're investing in you, and we're giving you the ability to have a voice so they can speak for themselves.
Right. Well, along these lines, you know, banking is a people business. It's a service industry, yet it's been disrupted by technological advancements. And I wanted to see if y'all could touch on that in whatever way you feel comfortable. But I know when I go in the Iberia Bank branches, there are tellers, physical people, but not all banks have that anymore, and things are changing so fast. So I guess two questions, you know, how is it affecting Iberia Bank? And second, if someone is listening and interested in a banking career, I mean, what path do you take? Are you IT or, you know, is this question making sense?
Like, yeah, it
things
does.
Are changing
it does.
Overnight.
Absolutely. I mean, I think all industries are changing, right? There's so many disruptors coming at us faster than ever before, but certainly the banking industry has its share of it. If you think back to being in line with, you know, using your card or writing a check, I mean, that's no longer a conversation. So today's disruptors are pretty intimidating. The top four banks in the country, you know, own the lion's share of deposits, and they have the ability to continue to be the disruptors in our industry. Mm-hmm. So for those of us that are not the top four, we have to continue to think about and make sure we own and understand the responsibility of maintaining relationships. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the value of having people, right, is
exactly.
to maintain
yeah.
their relationships. And so even in Lafayette, I'm sure that's what you're alluding to, one of the major banks has removed tellers from their branches, and they're trying to focus just on technology.
It doesn't feel good.
Yeah, we're not there yet. We're not there, and I don't see us going there.
Yeah.
I mean, we truly believe, you know, we're still a commercial bank. We still, well, certainly in Acadiana, we offer a lot of consumer banking opportunities. We really believe in relationships, and that is is still part of our, critical part of our foundation. So there are lots of different parts of the bank for people to work in. As we see young people come through, either at internships or in our training program, almost everyone immediately says, wow, I didn't realize banking offered so many different types of career opportunities, not just being a traditional banker. So IT, certainly, CRA, compliance. Compliance is a big deal, definitely a growing part of the company, of the industry. Audit, you know, accounting, finance, marketing, lots of different aspects of the company, and definitely tremendous number of career opportunities.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
You don't think about that, you just think banking. So they don't have to just have a business degree. It could be anything from accounting to
legal.
Legal. There you go, Beth. Yeah.
We have a big legal team at the bank. I'm not part of that team anymore, but it's a good, you know, numerous lawyers, rather.
Yeah. You know, I want to get in a plug for one of your employees, Sheila Thibodeau, is a good friend of mine. And last Friday, I did a cash closing where it was several hundred thousand dollars. And you don't see those a lot without a loan, but it was a cash purchase. And so I needed to wire money. And I hadn't done that in a few years. I used to have a big practice where I just would pick up the phone and do wire transfers, but that isn't the case right now. So I thought, who is going to help me with this? And I called Sheila. And I just loved having a person that I trusted, and we went through it together. But it just, I was uncomfortable because to me, it's like, there goes the money. What if I don't put the right little, one little digit and it goes to the wrong place? So I really enjoy having those personal relationships. Yeah. And in particular with Iberia, we bank, with you guys.
She is terrific.
Yeah, she is. So, yeah. Well, we're here with Jason Sikora, and you have been busy writing notes over here.
Yes, I have some questions. You hit on a couple of them a little bit, so I want to dig in as well. First of all, though, thank you, B1 and B2, for being here. And I love the B1 and B2. That's awesome. You guys do a lot of different stuff, apparently. Like, it's finance, marketing, synergy, project management. What drew you to this kind of position?
You know, for me, Beth Ardwin, it was really the opportunity to say yes, to do something I'd never done before.
Awesome.
And that really has, as Jan started the podcast, that was her question, is, well, you know, you've moved up in the ranks, kind of what got you there? Just for me, my experience has been, of course, working with fabulous people who believed in me, but just saying yes. I mean, I've taken on responsibilities through the years that I hadn't, no idea how that was going to pan out, or really had no experience in, and just taking a leap of faith really makes a huge difference.
I love that answer. We talked about that the other, but yeah. we talked about that in a previous podcast. Is jump in the river and say yes and see where it goes. B2, how about you?
I'll say I have a similar answer in that when I going way back, I lived in New Orleans for Katrina. My family decided to move here post Katrina, so moved here in 06, 1 year after. I didn't work for 10 years, so I went, once I, you know, you make pivots in life. So, you know, I turned 40 and said, what am I going to do with this law degree? It's now or never. Mm-hmm. And just so happened that, you know, fortuitous, Magistrate Judge Mike Hill in the district court, federal courthouse, needed an emergency sort of fill-in law clerk. So it was amazing. It was like, friend of a friend, you looking to go back to work? Wow, this job just opened. He needs someone. His like clerk's today. Taking a leave of absence. I met with him on a Friday, got my badge that afternoon. He hired me. I started Monday morning. Hadn't worked in 10 years. That was fun. It was great fun, actually. So I was with him almost 6 months. And so, great way to segue back into practicing law. I had been at a firm in New Orleans, so didn't know a whole bunch of lawyers here in Lafayette. And then I knew them all after clerking from, you know, Judge Hill. And so I had an opportunity to work. I think I had 3 law firm offers if I finished that job. But, you know, interestingly, our CEO, Daryl Bird, called me to be on the board of trustees of our kid's school, ESA, because he was rolling off. And I said, well, I'm thinking about going back to work. And he's like, oh, well, you got to come talk to me. Let's talk both. Right. So, of course, I ended up talking with him. I had 3 law firm offers. And I thought, and I'd been in a law firm, so I know how to do that. And I knew that job well. But then I had this really cool bank opportunity and thought, you know what? He's a mover and a shaker, and this bank is, I knew enough about the bank to know they were growing, and I thought, you know what? that's going to be way more interesting and a lot more fun. And sure enough, it has been. It still is today. So yeah. It was a good choice.
10 years has flown by.
Excellent.
Yes.
Very cool. So you guys talked about disruptors, and it reminded me about a month ago, I got a check from my mortgage company because I paid too much escrow, and I went, I have to go to the bank now and find some time. And then I was like, no, I can use my phone and deposit this. This is so amazing. What are there any new technologies in, say, the next few years that you guys have seen it that might disrupt things even a little bit more? Because I've heard, I mean, those polls online say that tellers are going away and everything's going to be electronic and everything's going to be on your phone. And have you seen any new technologies that are going to really?
Well, no, I'm not in the IT world, you know, technology world, but no, I mean, certainly, as you just mentioned, I mean, the ability for clients to bank wherever they are 24/7 is an amazing opportunity for clients and for banks to really think about how to deliver their products and services. Interestingly, if you think about it, banks like ours, even as we add more technology, we've still held on to the original delivery system. So while we have fewer branches than before, we still have branches, we still have bankers, we still have ATMs, we still have checks. And now we have, of course, credit cards and debit cards and remote capture, deposit capture. Here at Iberia, if you banked with us, you can, of course, deposit your checks into the ATM and your cash. So there's always going to be emerging technology, and certainly there'll be continue to be disruptors for sure.
Gotcha. Do you have anything to add?
Well, what I'd add to that is, while, you know, definitely alternative delivery, electronic banking is the way of the future, but it's not going to replace the branches. And what the FDIC studies have shown year in, year out, they do a study every other year on branching, is that while folks are moving to alternative delivery as an additional way of banking, they still want to walk in a branch every once in a while. Mm-hmm. So, and that's true regardless of your income. So that's low, middle, you know, mod, upper, it doesn't matter what your income level is. At some point, you still want to go in a bank. And so that's not going away. So as Beth has indicated, you know, we have definitely shrunk our footprint and you know, have pruned branches because they are not seeing as much foot traffic as they used to. But those alternative delivery methods are not going to replace branches. So branches are critically important still and will remain, and particularly in the low and mid-income neighborhoods, you know, as well as everywhere else. So, you know, I think that the next wave will be all fully electronic loan docs. You know, you don't have the ability to open or close all different types of loans today. You can do some limited loan closings online, but really that one still requires paper. And so you can open up, you can open accounts online, but I think we'll see more of electronic everything, A to Z, all the different loan types. But that's still in progress right now.
That would be a miracle, as opposed to
the stack,
2 to 3 inches stack of papers.
Yeah. So I think we're getting to that.
Yeah, and I think in a community like Acadiana, where we love relationships, right? We like to come to the same table and break bread. Having a tangible brand, I think, still matters.
I think so, too. And, you know, we had on Jason a couple months ago, David Joseph. He's the U.S. attorney for the Western District, and he was talking about how banks such as yours and others, really with technology now, they can detect fraud so much quicker, and it helps protect people against scams because they'll see trends and they'll see deposits being made that look kind of fishy. And I know all the technology that we don't even see behind the scenes is really where a lot of your services are, by helping protect your depositors.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, it's our responsibility, right, to stay current with the latest and greatest ability to protect our clients. And so we absolutely do that.
Yeah.
Well, and that's, coming from an IT company, it's so tough to keep up with, but it's important. And that's why we have so many graphs on the screens in here, is we see an alert and we have to hop on it right away. All right, advice for females who want to get into finance or do what you do.
So we both, I think, see ourselves as non-financial bankers.
Okay, all right, that's fair.
We work marketing and legal. Yes,
right.
Not
great
bankers.
Yeah. We you know, have wonderful responsibilities, but we're not bankers. But as I mentioned earlier, there's so many different aspects of a bank. Whether you're coming in from the financial side to be a banker, or from the financial side to be in finance or accounting, compliance is really an emerging field. Audit is still an important part of the bank. BSA, as Jan just mentioned, the Bank Secrecy Act, we have a large team of people committed to to BSA, and that's really, really important in the banking industry. So I could go on and on with the lots of probably surprising opportunities within banks in addition to just the traditional financial position.
So, but yeah, you don't have to necessarily study finance to go work at a bank.
Correct.
No.
Excellent. B2, final question. I love that. I really do. Big shout out to Habitat for Humanity. And can you just talk about, maybe for a minute, about what they do? For those who don't know.
Sure, I'm happy to, and I feel bad. I should steal the thunder of Melinda Taylor. Maybe you'll have her on one of your podcasts.
Yeah.
Habitat, broadly, is helping people realize their dream of home ownership. And it's a hand up, it's not a handout. So the program, some people have a misconception that Habitat just gives houses to people, like they won the lottery or something. Mm-hmm. It's very far from the truth. In fact, homeowners have an application process that we go through. There are one or two rounds per year. We're actually about to enter a round right now. So we'll have hundreds of applicants for maybe 20 slots available. They go through rigorous financial counseling. They do hard labor in construction of their homes and helping others in the McCombs neighborhood, which is where we're focused right now. There are credit standards. They do look at alternative credit, like renter, phone bills. Cell phone bills, maybe the traditional credit terms don't look at, but there is still a minimum sort of credit requirement as well. And those homeowners will go through approximately a two-year program before they ever get the keys to their house. And again, it's highly organized, structured programming around home maintenance, financial literacy, which we at Berry Bank teach financial literacy in all of our markets, including helping Habitat do that when they need. It's a fairly rigorous program. And it's a zero interest loan. When we give a donation to Habitat and they get federal funding as well as a 501c3 nonprofit, we're helping people with the affordability of the house. But they are still buying the home. They are signing a mortgage. They're closing. Habitat is actually closing that loan for that homeowner. And they do have, it's just a much smaller cost because of the money that is donated, the in-kind goods that are donated make the home cheaper than it otherwise would be. So it's under $200,000 to buy a really nice quality three-bedroom home. And so it is truly a hand up rather than a handout. And it's a wonderful program. Again, as Jan alluded to, it's got those mortgages have very low, like less than 5% default rates. These homeowners pay their bills on time. They end up owning a home. And it's a change of a lifetime for them because they are now invested in an asset that they own, and then it's helping their future generations as well.
And it raises property values for everyone.
Yep.
Because they're revitalizing neighborhoods that had been neglected for a while, and you can see the difference as you drive through the core of Lafayette and other towns, too, where Habitat is.
We just wish we could do more homes, but, the money doesn't grow on trees.
Yes.
But it's a critically important program.
Yeah. Well, thank you for mentioning that. I only thought of it because, you talked about it, and I have about 5 boxes of vinyl soffit for Habitat for Humanity. And if they were open this Saturday, I would have went. But
Off at the Restore.
Yeah, Labor Day weekend, they were closed.
Yes.
So, but no, they're in my garage and they're ready to go. Oh, and we also donated this massive shelving unit. We had to actually have them come out and take it apart. It was so big, it wouldn't fit out our front door.
But they're great. They'll come to your house.
Yeah, they're amazing.
Need help, sure.
And they're
call.
The nicest people in the world. And I know this is about Iberia Bank, but I just wanted to give a shout out to them.
No, thank you.
So thank you both for being here. This has been awesome. And Jan, obviously, always, thank you for letting me ask a few questions.
Well, thank you, Jason. Thanks for taping the show.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Greater Solutions for helping us. Well, I want to thank both Beth Ardwan and Beth Trotter, B1 and B2. Again, we're kidding you guys, but thank both Beths for taking time out of your workday to come share not only what Iberia Bank does, but to share opportunities for all of us in the banking industry. And I'd like to thank our listeners, too, for being so loyal. You can find this podcast and all of our podcasts at discoverlafayette.net, or you can subscribe by going to the little icon on your phone. It's a little podcast icon, and you can have this delivered to your phone every Friday morning when we release our latest podcast. On behalf of Discover Lafayette, I'm Jan Swift.